I like things my way. My coffee, my schedule, and my treatment. So I talked to my doctor about self-injecting with the VivGuard Hytrulo prefilled syringe, which contains efgartigimod alpha and hyaluronidase QVFC. It's injected under your skin, subcutaneously. It means I can inject in my space, on my time. It's my treatment, my way. Visit VivGuardMyWay.com. That's V-Y-V-G-A-R-T MyWay.com. And talk to your doctor about VivGuard Hytrulo, brought to you by Argenix.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social.
Today on The Grave Talks, discovering spirits. After his grandmother passed away, a mysterious message was found on the answering machine of Chris Jiminy's mother. A message that all but confirmed there is life after death. This message would be the catalyst and confirmation that would spark a lifelong quest to better understand the world beyond the living. On this journey, Chris would have many experiences with the dead and possibly otherworldly beings. These encounters would lead Chris to wonder just how wide of a space the paranormal interconnects with. Today, we discuss that world with paranormal investigator Chris Jiminy's.
So for me, it was all about TV shows. So when I was younger, I used to watch shows like MTV's Fear, Very Scary Stories, Unsolved Mysteries, things like that. And I always just was always interested in the paranormal from as long as I can remember. And as far as, so I have a very funny story about like Unsolved Mysteries and Very Scary Stories. I was always interested in one story in particular named Gordon's Light, which took place in Michigan. And the story is... I believe he was a caretaker on a railroad. His name was Gordon, and he was killed by an oncoming train. And the legend is if you go to the tracks and you knock on the railroad, like the railroad tracks, with a rock three times, you'll see his lantern swing back and forth. And I've always wanted to go investigate it, but of course I believe the tracks were, they've all been paved over, so no one really knows where the place is now. But that story always intrigued me because I never really thought, oh, I live in Michigan. This stuff takes place in Michigan. I need to find stuff to investigate. So that's kind of where it started. But it wasn't really until a few years ago at a Comic-Con that I met a man named John E.L. Tenney. And he really started my whole, how am I trying to say this? He really, like my theories are, in some way, everything is connected. And talking to him, I realized he has the same theories. He has the same thoughts as I do. Well, little did I know, he had done the research for Gordon's Light on Very Scary Stories. So in a way, John E.L. Tenney sparked my interest in the paranormal.
That's interesting how sometimes those things all end up being connected. I just had a conversation yesterday with a gentleman, and one of the early stories that that got me intrigued into the paranormal was a story from Unsolved Mysteries about haunted bunk beds in Horicon, Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
And it turns out the gentleman I was talking to yesterday, his sister ended up in possession of all of the research that the paranormal investigators did, because they have since passed away. And she went down to Georgia to the widow of the investigator and got all the slides, all the everything that he had investigated for that story back in the day. And now she's re-going through all of this today. But it's just funny how all of those things, you know, they kind of come together full circle when you least expect them.
For sure.
You know, especially with a lot of us who grew up, you know, in the 80s and were children and just, you know, intrigued by this subject. And it was one of those things where you could talk about it. I grew up in Wisconsin, and in that state, it seemed very open. To this day, it seems very open as far as people discussing ghosts and paranormal without being looked at too strangely. I know Michigan is fairly similar as well. I lived in Michigan for a period of time, up in the Petoskey, Traverse City area, and I loved kind of wandering around there and trying to find interesting sites. I wasn't an investigator or anything at the time. I just worked in radio, but I was always intrigued and wandering around. What were some of the other ghostly local legends or haunts that intrigued you as a child growing up there?
So I had heard stories about the Whitney Mansion in Detroit, and I eventually got to investigate there, and that was a really cool place. There was a local legend in Jackson, Michigan, called, it was Reynolds Cemetery, and it all revolves around the Crouch murders in Reynolds Cemetery. And basically, it was on November 21st of 1883 in Jackson, Michigan, there was a brutal mass murder. Five people were killed. Jacob Crouch, his daughter Eunice, who was 9 months pregnant, Eunice's husband Henry White, and Moses Polly, which was a friend of the family who was visiting them, they were all killed in their sleep by gunshot. Strangely enough, 2 months later, January 2nd in 1884, their surviving daughter, Jacob Crouch, Susan Holcomb, her naked body was found on the floor of her bedroom. Now, some people say she was forced to ingest poison. Others say she killed herself as not to testify against her husband, James Foy, things like that. But the local legend was sometime between November 21st and November 22nd, Jacob and his daughter Eunice would meet in the cemetery that night around midnight. So every year, the police would run rampant. They try to chase everybody off. So back in 2008, I got the chance to go and investigate the cemetery, and it was one of the best investigations I've ever had.
What happened?
So when we first drive up around the block, we saw that there were tons of people. Like, it's a really small cemetery. It's probably like as big as someone's front yard, but there were a bunch of people there. So as we drive up, we see the police are chewing people away. So we're like, oh crap, we're not going to be able to investigate here. So we decided to drive around the block. There was a gas station. So we grabbed a quick bite to eat, and we just were talking about, like, should we do this? Should we not do this? And then we decided, you know what? Let's drive by, see if anyone's there. And if there's no one there, we'll park down the road and we'll walk to the cemetery. So as we were heading there, there's, of course, other cemeteries nearby. We drive past one. I see this bright blue flash in the middle of the cemetery. I have them stop the car. We get out. I thought, okay, police lights, they got us. No, there's nothing. So this isn't even Reynolds Cemetery, and already I'm seeing something at a different cemetery nearby. Mm-hmm. We're like, okay, this is a sign. Let's go check this place out. So we go to Reynolds. We find no one's there. No police are there. We park down the street, and we walk over, and this place, like I said, it's tiny, but it was intense. The first thing I did was we took an EMF meter, and we went to certain grave sites, and the EMF meter was just peaking right off the charts. We're like, oh, okay, so maybe there's just high EMF around here or something. There is, like, there's one light for the whole cemetery, and it's connected by just, like, two telephone poles. So we're thinking, okay, maybe this is just high EMF. So about 5-10 minutes later, I go back to the same gravestones, no EMF, nothing. So we're like, okay. Everyone's like, this is weird. So there's a far corner off the cemetery. No one felt comfortable approaching. Like, you could just feel the tension. Like, no one should be there. Like, something wanted us out of this place. You could just feel, it was like, just such oppression there. Mm-hmm. So after gaining our exposure, we decide, all right, let's walk over there, see what happens. So we start walking over, and the strong smell of sulfur hits me. It stops me in my tracks, and I'm like, okay, what is this? You know, back in 2008, we started watching, you know, that's when Ghost Adventures and all that started. So me being the naive kid I was, I'm like, oh, God, demons and all that stuff.
Sure.
So I didn't really know. So I'm like, oh, God, what is this? So the minute, the exact moment I smell a strong scent of sulfur, I look and a police car drives by. Now, I'm by myself. I didn't know my fellow investigators ran back to the car. So here I am in the cemetery by myself. I smell sulfur. I'm directly under the one light that illuminates the whole area, and a cop drives by, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to jail. So I freeze. To my surprise, drive right by and never stop. So I said to myself, I'm either as still as a statue or I'm their best ghost story.
Exactly. I was wondering the same thing of like, oh my God, I saw a ghost in the, you know, they were thinking that you were the ghost.
Exactly. So I'm like, I'm sitting there for a minute. They drive by, they're gone. I'm like, all right, I have got to check out this corner. So as I'm walking by, and at this time, I didn't know that my fellow investigators weren't with me. I had no idea. So I start walking and I hear footsteps. I'm like, oh, someone's, you know, they saw the cop. They're letting me know like, hey, maybe we should get out of here. And I hear footsteps approaching me. I turn around. That's when I discover I'm by myself. And it's fall, so there's leaves everywhere. So you can obviously hear the crunching. So now I'm like, okay, what is going on? So now I hear running coming towards me. And I'm like, all right, this corner is nothing to be messed with. And I start thinking, maybe it's right around midnight. So this is the time that Jacob and his daughter are meeting up. So maybe they're telling me it's time to go. So we decide, let's get out of there. It's crazy. So I head back to the car. I tell them what goes on and they agree with me. Let's get out of here. It's time to go. So I'm like, that's fine. So I go home, go to bed. The next morning, my team leader calls me and she's like, Chris, she's like, I can't breathe. Holy crap. Oh my God. You'll never believe what happened. I said, what's going on? She said, our researchers screwed up. I said, what are you talking about? And she said, we were there on the wrong day. We were there the day before. I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So that cemetery was just crazy.
That right there almost ties back into the things happening for a reason.
Exactly.
Thing. Did you always believe in the paranormal? Going way back prior to that experience, but back into childhood when you were, you know, watching Unsolved Mysteries and all the programs, what was your belief in the paranormal and ghosts? Was it just something that you accepted as well as accepting that some days it rains as a fact? Or were you searching for confirmation of the paranormal to confirm that belief?
So I pretty much was searching for, I mean, I felt like, okay, you know, we live in a weird world as it is. So the craziness we see in real life, you know, on an everyday basis, there's got to be something more to this. So I, you know, I thought, okay, ghosts have to exist. You know, it's such a big universe. We can't be alone in this universe and all that. You know, Bigfoot, cryptids, we're finding new creatures every day. So that, it just, to me, it was accepted. And it wasn't until like the day of my grandma's funeral that like cemented that and it like just right in stone, like, okay, there's something beyond life after death. And so the day of my grandma's funeral, this is my uncle's story, but he told me I could share it because it's one of my favorite stories. He was sitting at home with his wife, Tricia, and my uncle Pat, he said something to the likes of like, oh, I hope mom's okay, or I miss mom. And this is back when we used to have answering machines, so the younger viewers might not know what that is. So back on you remember when we had answering machines and when you couldn't find the phone, you'd press that button at the phone locator and the phone would beep?
Sure, yes.
So they're sitting there and the phone's right next to them and it, all of a sudden it goes off just like that. And he's like, what the heck? Like, oh, maybe battery's dying or something. So they've been home. They haven't really gotten any phone calls all day. You know, obviously, when they came back from the funeral, he checked there were no messages. So he sets the phone on the cradle, and there's a message. So he plays the message, and in my grandma's voice, you can hear, don't worry, son. And that's it, just those three words. And he sent us the recording, and I listened to it. I'm like, that's 100% my grandmother's voice. Like, she's telling us she's okay. So it was like that, to me, that cemented, like, there is something in this world that we don't understand. And I'm like, I have to find out what this is.
How old are you at the time when that message came through?
I had to be 11 or 12, I believe.
Oh. What was your parents, what were the adults' reaction to this? Because I can imagine, you know, this happens and this has got to flow around the family a little bit of, you won't believe what happened.
My mom for sure believed it. My sister's a bit skeptical. She, you know, still to this day says, no, it wasn't her. My dad, he's a little bit skeptical, but he's more of a UFO guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, you know, he was 50-50 on it. But for my mom, my aunts and all that, they were all, you know, just like me, dead set. Like, that was my grandmother.
The ones who don't believe that it was your grandmother, what is their explanation? Just prank call kids? I mean, what do they tell themselves?
You know, it's funny. I've never asked her that. You know, I think to her, it was just interference or something. I think she wants to believe, but she's scared to believe in it. Like, she doesn't really want to experience any of this stuff, to be honest.
I understand that.
She always tells me when I go on investigations, she goes, don't you dare bring anything home, even though it's not true.
Yeah, because I think it's one of those things where with some people, if especially people who are very rigid in their beliefs, and I don't know if that's your aunt or not, but I have some people in my life that are very, very rigid in their beliefs, and mm-hmm. ghosts are not one of them. And amongst many other things that have nothing to do with the paranormal. But the thing is, I think for some, it feels like if you were to crack one of those very rigid beliefs, then everything else is going to have a crack in it, too. And then all of mm-hmm. that could come tumbling down. And I think that's a very, exactly. very scary prospect for people, especially folks who've gone a long time in life with these belief systems and, you know, may have regrets, may have certain decisions that have been made based on some of these belief systems, and it would just kind of throw everything out of whack. And that's a scary, scary prospect. So I get where they're coming from, but it makes you wonder sometimes deep down, do they believe? And they're just like mm-hmm. somehow saying it out loud is like it's almost like a superstition to a certain extent.
Exactly.
We can't say this out loud. So was that for you, the answering machine message? Was that like the first kind of experience beyond what you had seen on television, like a firsthand experience of something paranormal in your world?
Oh yeah, 100%.
So what did you do as a child after that to continue to dig? I know you said when you got older, you actually did start to do some investigating. But between mm-hmm. that point and the answering machine message, those teen years, obviously we're not quite to the point of, you know, Travel Channel ghost shows yet. It's Robert Stack in a trench coat.
Exactly.
That's our ghost shows. What were you doing? What was your interest level? What were you doing to try and dig more into this topic?
So, of course, you know, I would hit the local library, see if there were any books. I went to a bookstore, and of course, I think every amateur ghost hunter has the giant ghost book by Hans Holzer. I read through that.
Sure.
And then it was just reading for me, basically. It was doing the research behind it. And I read Hans Holzer's book. When Ghost Hunters came out, I read Jason Hawes and Grant Wilson's books. That's all it was for me, was reading. It wasn't until, like, finally, like, I found a team that located, or I'm sorry, a local team that investigated, that I started doing investigations. Because I never thought, as a young, you know, younger guy or a young teen, to go into a cemetery at night with a recorder and a camera and see what happens. It's just, I was always followed by the rules. I never really broke the rules. So yeah. Going into a cemetery never occurred to me.
Yeah, no, I understand. It's one of the, I do not investigate. I've gone out maybe once or twice, really with a microphone to record for a broadcast, not to truly like try and get evidence. Because mm-hmm. I'm more afraid of getting arrested than I am of
exactly.
seeing a ghost. But when you went out there for the first time, when you did find a group or your first going onto a location that is supposedly haunted with the purpose of investigating, either to document or just to have an experience. What was that location? Whether anything happened or not, we'll get to it, but what was the location?
So I have to go from memory because this was a restaurant in Detroit they tore down. I believe it was called the Fox and Hound Inn.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember a lot of the history. I just remember what happened to me because it was my first time investigating, my first location ever. And it was a two-story restaurant. Like downstairs was the restaurant. Upstairs was like the banquet room. And there was a room that apparently none of the employees like to go into. And it's super dark. Like there, even with a flashlight, you can barely see anything in this room. So I said, all right, I'm going to go in this room. I have one other investigator with me. I'll be in one corner. He'll be in the other. So we'll be a far distance from each other. If anything happens, we can kind of call to each other like, hey, did you hear that? Did you hear this? Da, da, da. Well, I'm sitting in this room and I didn't realize he had got up and walked away. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, why are employees afraid to walk into this room? You know, what are you? I started taunting, which, you know, I learned my lesson from taunting because the next thing you know, I got slapped in the face. So I grabbed my flashlight. I'm thinking, oh, the fellow investigator is just playing a prank on me or something. I grab my flashlight, immediately turn it on. I go search the room. He isn't there. I run out there. I said, you know, why did you hit me in the face? He's like, what are you talking about? I said, why did you just slap me in the face? You're like, dude, he's been with us for the past 20 minutes. What are you talking about? So I was like, okay, learn my lesson. I'll never taunt again.
Was it that simple of a feeling of, okay, I learned my lesson. I'm not going to taunt again.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, you had to have been, there had to have been some other beyond that. Cause I mean, that's almost like a reaction if a human did it of, okay, I won't taunt my mom,
yeah.
You know, but knowing at that exact moment that you got slapped in the face by a ghost, by a spirit. I mean, what's going through your mind at that second? I mean, obviously emotions are running high and it's a very time sensitive situation, but what's going through your mind when you realize, oh my God, I had contact with a spirit, something physically affected me. Cause that kind of opens up a whole door to a lot of possibilities when you realize that this can happen.
So of course, after they told me, then I'm like, I don't believe them. They had to be playing a prank on me. And then,
yeah.
So after the realization, like, okay, they're not playing a prank. They're serious. I had to sit down. I had to sit down and think like, what just happened? And the only thing I could come back to was like, okay, I challenged something. Like I was like, oh, you're big and bad, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, okay, so I challenged something. I got an immediate reaction. And I remember I broke out into a cold sweat. They had me step outside for a little bit, get some water. It's just one of those things that's just going through your head. Like I knew from the my grandma's message, I knew like, okay, there's a peaceful side. And then, okay, where did this violent side come from? And again, I don't believe in demons and all that stuff. I think that gets too overhyped. But back then I'm like, oh, what did I do? You know, what kind of circle of hell did I open up? Stuff like that. So I'm just sitting there like, okay, could it be because of this? Could it be because of that? Are these people really messing? Because this is the first time I've really met these people. So I'm like, are they messing with me? Things like that. And the only thing I could come back to was like, okay, I taunted. I've learned my lesson. Do not taunt. Because I've never taunted ever again after that experience.
That's understandable. What sort of other techniques were you learning at the time? Obviously, you were at that moment new to this, and you were trying to get evidence, trying to have an experience. And I think that's more what folks are doing than anything else. And in the guise of, I'm trying to get evidence. It's like, no, you just really want to have a creepy ass experience. And that's fine. You know, let's just call it what it is. But, you know, and then, you know, as you progress more into it, then it's more, you know, let's get evidence. But at the beginning, it's like, let's prove this shit's real. But when you have that experience, And you realized, oh, oh my God, taunting works, which is kind of amazing because a lot of people, their first many a times out or ever, nothing happens. I talk with so many investigators who, you know, have been doing this for, you know, 20, 30 years. And they're like, yeah, I don't really, I've never really had a true definitive experience that I can say was paranormal. You know, like I could, they always have something where they can kind of write it off. And they're not super, I don't want to believe in it, skeptic type folks. They're just like, I, you know, they haven't been slapped. They haven't had that sort of a thing happen to them personally. What other things did you learn to do or best practices, if you will, to bring things out or to try and communicate with things on the other side, I guess, with respect, without risking getting slapped by a ghost?
So back then, I had realized this team really hadn't been doing many investigations. They were just pretty much copying whatever they did on Ghost Hunters.
Yeah.
So they kind of taught me a little bit, like, you know, EVP recording, EMF temperature recording. And so I would ask questions like, you know, how did it feel when you died, or what does it feel like when you died? And it wasn't until I met Tenny, like, to ask the right questions. Like, you don't want to ask a dead person, like, how did it feel when you were stabbed 400 times? Like, he made that very clear. Like, that's so disrespectful. He was like, you wouldn't want something traumatic to happen to you and people just keep asking you about it over and over. So he taught me, like, talk to them just like they're regular people. And I was like, holy crap, I never thought of it that way. So now it's, you know, when I do an EVP session, it's like, how are you? How has your day been? You know, can you tell me your name? It's nice to meet you, things like that. And I found that just talking regularly like a person, you get so much more response.
I agree. I think that's one of those things where we forget, or many people who jump into this often forget. Many of these things are, they're people. They were people. You know, they were walking around, and it's almost kind of, I think, sometimes like when you're at that age of like 7 or 8 and people still talk to you like a baby, how annoying that is.
Yeah.
And I think the dead probably feel that same way, where it's like, look, I was here like 3 weeks ago. Why are you suddenly talking to me like I'm some demon or something? You know, why is this always a challenge? It's like, no. And I think you're right. Sometimes just the reasoning and the talking in a normal way is one of the most effective things. And that's one of those interesting principles that I thought sounded kind of ridiculous when I started doing our other program, Real Ghost Stories Online, almost 7, 8 years ago now. When we started getting our stories in from people, one of the most common things we would hear in terms of eradicating something or calming a haunting down was the simple speaking out loud, saying, look, please stop. You're scaring me. We can live here in peace and harmony together, but whatever you're doing, you got to just kind of knock this off. It wasn't, you know, wandering around with a crucifix and holy water and a team of priests. It was just speaking out loud. Now, does that work in every case? No. But more than not, that seems to be the simple answer. And I guess that was one of the most shocking things to me when I dived into this world, was that was a very common answer to these occurrences. What was your initial goal? And I guess, what is your goal today when you go out and investigate? Are you there to try and help someone eradicate what's going on? Are you there to just give another voice of confirmation that, no, you're not crazy? I mean, what is it for you?
So When I do something like a home investigation or something like that, mine is to calm their fears. Like, I'll get a lot of emails from people, and I have a demon in my house. I have a demon in my house. You don't have a demon in your house. You just have and then you may not even have a spirit. You just may be hearing something you're not used to. So I go in, I try to get as much evidence I can. I try to calm their fears, and I tell them exactly, like, if you're really feeling like you're scared, you just say out loud, like, hey, look, this is my house. I don't mind sharing it with you, but this has to stop. This has to stop. This has to stop. And I'd say probably good about 80-90%. It works. You know, these people, though, I'll hear from them like a few months later, and they're like, oh my God, it worked. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And it's like, yeah, and a lot of it is just, it's their own psychology. And a lot of, and I always suggest whenever I do an investigation is like, talk to a therapist as well, because not only you might not be experiencing something paranormal, but you may have experienced something traumatic in your life that is now coming out. Now that you're older, you may have repressed it for so long and you're thinking you're experiencing paranormal. So it's always, my thing is just talk it out. It's the best thing to do, whether it be a therapist, whether it be just sitting alone in the dark talking to yourself. That's what I always suggest. And it works almost a good amount of the time. And then I get people that are like, oh my God, you know, that didn't work. And then I go in and I'm like, okay, let's see what the problem is. And it just turns out it's just they have so much turmoil and emotion in their life that it's manifesting in different ways. They're almost creating tulpas in a way. And it's like, okay, well, here's what, now this is when I really suggest a psychologist, a therapist, maybe a psychiatrist, because something has happened or, you know, something in your life is not happy. And it could be a job, it could be their marriage, anything like that. It's not my place to go on and tell them exactly what it is, but it's, they have to figure out what it is in their life that's creating this. And then every once in a while, you just get a spirit that doesn't want to go away. He just likes to cause trouble.
Mm-hmm. Do we ever cause our own hauntings? And there's two ways of looking at this, and I'm interested to hear your perspective. I believe in from my experience and the thousands of stories that I've heard, when you're in an unhappy state, you're in a depressive state, there's oppression, there's sad things going on in your physical, regular, everyday life. Mm-hmm. That does obviously seem to be an attraction to energy, to some sort of negative energy that sometimes attaches on and then manifests itself in negative ways, that as an outside force that seems to come in. But is there also the case where we are causing our own hauntings, where basically it's not an outside force that's attracted to the negativity? It's our own negativity. It's our own negative energy that in some way, shape, or form manifests itself, not necessarily as another being, but influencing our atmosphere, almost poltergeist-type things, tipping shit over.
Yeah, exactly.
Things happening where it's not necessarily a conscious thing that's there to try and screw with you, but essentially, you know, it's the effect of, you know, me throwing a ball across the room and knocking over a vase, except it's some sort of an energy force that we're exerting out of ourselves that's doing these things. And then we assume, oh, it's a being that's doing it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree 100%. Yeah, I think a lot of people there, you know, other people have high energy of consciousness that can, they are able to manifest their own haunting. Like they're going through something so traumatic or a depression that something happens and they're like, oh, a ghost did that or da da da. And it's like, no, you did that. Like, you have to understand, like, there are, you know, obviously there's psychic vampires and stuff out there, but there's people that also are able to boost that energy and have something happen.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Chris Jimenez about discovering spirits. In part two of our conversation, is there ever a way to truly eradicate a house of spirits if they refuse to leave? Chris says he does not believe in demons. Why is that? Does Chris believe that there are spirits that were never human? What does Chris believe is behind the spirits that have knowledge beyond that of a human who has passed on into another world? And where does Chris think we will be in 30 years' time in terms of understanding of ghosts and spirits? All of that and more in our conversation with Chris Jimenez as we continue on The Grave Talks. To find out more about Chris and his work, visit facebook.com/ChrisJParanormal. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are,
and that's who we care about.
Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are,
and that's who we care about.
Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.